I don't belong with the rest of you, he said abruptly. After what I did, I don't deserve aratzas and healing and hugs and being consoled and whatever else it is my friends are going to think I need. I'd rather stay up here with him. He jerked his chin toward the place where Sebastian's motionless body lay in the open coffin on its stone pedestal. And I sure as hell don't deserve you. Clary crossed her arms over her chest. Have you ever thought about what I deserve? That maybe I deserve to get a chance to talk to you about what happened? He stared at her. They were only a few feet apart, but it felt as if an inexpressible gulf lay between them. I don't know why you'd even want to look at me, much less talk to me. Jace, she said, those things you did, that wasn't you. He hesitated. The sky was so black, the lit windows of the nearby skyscrapers so bright. It was as if they stood in the center of a net of shining jewels. If it wasn't me, he said, then why can I remember everything I did? When people are possessed, and they come back from it, they don't remember what they did when the demon inhabited them. But I remember everything. He turned abruptly and walked away, toward the roof garden wall. She followed him, glad for the distance it put between them and Sebastian's body, now hidden from view by a row of hedges. Jace, she called out, and he turned, his back to the wall, slumping against it. Behind him, a city's worth of electricity lit up the night like the demon towers of Alicante. You remember because she wanted you to remember, Clary said, catching up with him, a little breathless. She did this to torture you as much as she did it to get Simon to do what she wanted. She wanted you to have to watch yourself hurt the people you love. I was watching, he said in a low voice. It was as if some part of me was off at a distance, watching and screaming at myself to stop. But the rest of me felt completely peaceful and like what I was doing was right. Like it was the only thing I could do. I wonder if that's how Valentine felt about everything he did. Like it was so easy to be right. He looked away from her. I can't stand it, he said. You shouldn't be here with me. You should just go. Instead of leaving, Clary moved to stand beside him against the wall. Her arms were already wrapped around herself. She was shivering. Finally, reluctantly, he turned his head to look at her again. Clary, you don't get to decide, she said, where I go or when. I know. His voice was ragged. I've always known that about you. I don't know why I had to fall in love with someone who's more stubborn than I am. Clary was silent a moment. Her heart had contracted at those two words, in love. All those things you said to me, she said in a half-whisper, on the terrace at the ironworks. Did you mean them? His golden eyes dulled. Which things? That you loved me? She almost said. But thinking back, he hadn't said that, had he? Not the words themselves. The implication had been there, and the truth of the fact that they loved each other was something she knew as clearly as she knew her own name. You kept asking me if I would love you if you were like Sebastian, like Valentine. And you said then I wouldn't be me. Look how wrong that turned out to be, he said, bitterness coloring his voice. What I did tonight. Clary moved toward him, he tensed, but didn't move away. She took hold of the front of his shirt, leaned in closely, and said, enunciating each word clearly, That wasn't you. Tell that to your mother, he said. Tell it to Luke, when they ask where this came from. He touched her collarbone gently. The wound was healed now, but her skin and the fabric of her dress were still stained darkly with blood. I'll tell them, she said. I'll tell them it was my fault. He looked at her, gold eyes incredulous. You can't lie to them. I'm not. I brought you back, she said. You were dead, and I brought you back. I upset the balance, not you. I opened the door for Lilith and her stupid ritual. I could have asked for anything. And I asked for you. She tightened her grip on his shirt, her fingers white with cold and pressure. And I would do it again. I love you, Jace Wayland. Herondale, Lightwood, whatever you want to call yourself, I don't care. I love you, and I will always love you, and pretending it could be any other way is just a waste of time. A look of such pain crossed his face that Clary felt her heart tighten. Then he reached out and took her face between his hands. His palms were warm against her cheeks. "Remember when I told you," he said, his voice as soft as she had ever heard it, "that I didn't know if there was a God or not. But either way, we were completely on our own? I still don't know the answer. I only knew that there was such a thing as faith, and that I didn't deserve to have it. And then there was you. You changed everything I believe in. You know that line from Dante that I quoted to you in the park? L'amore che muove il sole e l'altre stelle?" Her lips curled a little at the sides as she looked up at him. "I still don't speak Italian. It's a bit of the very last verse from Paradiso, Dante's Paradise. My will and my desire were turned by love, the love that moves the sun and the other stars." Dante was trying to explain faith, I think, as an overpowering love. And maybe it's blasphemous, but that's how I think of the way that I love you. You came into my life and suddenly I had one truth to hold on to, that I loved you, and you loved me. Though he seemed to be looking at her, his gaze was distant, as if fixed on something far away. "Then I started to have the dreams," he went on. "And I thought maybe I'd been wrong, that I didn't deserve you, that I didn't deserve to be perfectly happy. I mean, God, who deserves that? And after tonight, stop." She had been clutching his shirt. She loosened her grip now, flattening her hands against his chest. His heart was racing under her fingertips, his cheeks flushed, and not just from the cold. "Jace, through everything that happened tonight, I knew one thing, that it wasn't you hurting me. It wasn't you doing these things. I have an absolute incontrovertible belief that you are good, and that will never change." Jace took a deep, shuddering breath. "I don't even know how to try to deserve that." "You don't have to. I have enough faith in you," she said, "for both of us." His hand slid into her hair. The mist of their exhaled breath rose between them, a white cloud. "I missed you so much," he said, and kissed her, his mouth gentle on hers, not desperate and hungry the way it had been the last few times he had kissed her, but familiar and tender and soft. She closed her eyes as the world seemed to spin around her like a pinwheel. Sliding her hands up his chest, she stretched upward as far as she could, wrapping her arms around his neck, rising up on her toes to meet his mouth with hers. His fingers skimmed down her body, over skin and satin, and she shivered, leaning into him, and she was sure they both tasted like blood and ashes and salt. But it didn't matter. The world, the city, and all its lights and life seemed to have narrowed down to this, just her and Jace, the burning heart of a frozen world. He drew away first, reluctantly. She realized why a moment later. The sound of honking cars and screeching tires from the street below was audible, even up here. "The Clave," he said resignedly. Though he had to clear his throat to get the words out, Clary was pleased to hear. His face was flushed, as she imagined hers was. "They're here." With her hand in his, Clary looked over the edge of the roof wall and saw that a number of long black cars had drawn up in front of the scaffolding. People were piling out. It was hard to recognize them from this height, but Clary thought she saw Maris and several other people dressed in gear. A moment later, Luke's truck roared up to the curb and Jocelyn leaped out. Clary would have known it was her, just from the way she moved, at a greater distance than this one. Clary turned to Jace. "My mom," she said. "I'd better get downstairs. I don't want her coming up here and seeing..." and seeing him. She jerked her chin towards Sebastian's coffin. He stroked her hair back from her face. I don't want to let you out of my sight. Then come with me. No, someone should stay up here. He took her hand, turned it over, and dropped the Morgenstern ring into it, the chain pooling like liquid metal. The clasp had bent when she'd torn it off, but he'd managed to push it back into shape. Please take it. Her eyes flicked down, and then, uncertainly, back up to his face. I wish I understood what it meant to you. He shrugged slightly. I wore it for a decade, he said. Some part of me is in it. It means I trust you with my past and all the secrets that past carries. And besides, lightly he touched one of the stars engraved around the rim. The love that moves the sun and all the other stars. Pretend that that's what the stars stand for. Not Morgenstern. In answer, she dropped the chain back over her head, feeling the ring settle in its accustomed place below her collarbone. It felt like a puzzle piece clicking back into place. For a moment, their eyes locked in wordless communication, more intense in some ways than their physical contact had been. She held the image of him in her mind in that moment, as if she were memorizing it. The tangled golden hair, the shadows cast by his lashes, the rings of darker gold inside the light amber of his eyes. I'll be right back, she said. She squeezed his hand. 5 minutes. Go on, he said roughly, releasing her hand, and she turned and went back down the path. The moment she stepped away from him, she was cold again, and by the time she reached the doors to the building, she was freezing. She paused as she opened the door and looked back at him, but he was only a shadow, backlit by the glow of the New York skyline. The love that moves the sun and all the other stars, she thought. And then, as if an answering echo, she heard Lilith's words. The kind of love that can burn down the world or raise it up in glory. A shiver ran through her, and not just from the cold. She looked for Jace, but he had vanished into the shadows. She turned and headed back inside, the door sliding shut behind her.
Alec had gone upstairs to look for Jordan and Maya, and Simon and Isabel were alone together, sitting side by side on the green chaise longue in the lobby. Isabel held Alec's witchlight in her hand, illuminating the room with a nearly spectral glow, sparking dancing motes of fire from the pendant chandelier. She had said very little since her brother had left them together. Her head was bent, her dark hair falling forward, her gaze on her hands. They were delicate hands, long-fingered but calloused as her brother's were. Simon had never noticed before, but she wore a silver ring on her right hand, with a pattern of flames around the band of it, and a carved L in the center. It reminded him of the ring Clary wore around her neck, with its design of stars. "It's a Lightwood family ring," she said, noticing where his gaze was fixed. "Every family has an emblem. Ours is fire." "It suits you," he thought. Izzy was like fire, in her flaming scarlet dress, with her moods as changeable as sparks. On the roof he'd half thought she'd strangle him, her arms around his neck as she called him every name under the sun, while clutching him like she'd never let him go. Now she was staring off into the distance, as untouchable as a star. It was all very disconcerting. "You loved him so," Camilla said. "Your shadow hunter friends. As the falcon loves the master, who binds and blinds it." "What you told us," he said, a little halting, watching Isabel wind a strand of her hair around her forefinger. "Up on the roof, that you hadn't known the Clary and Jace were missing. That you come here for me. Was that true?" Isabel looked up, tucking the strand of hair behind her ear. "Of course it's true," she said indignantly. "When we saw you were gone from the party, and you've been in danger for days, Simon... And what with Camille escaping," she caught herself up short. "And Jordan's responsible for you. He was freaking out. So it was his idea to come looking for me?" Isabel turned to look at him for a long moment. Her eyes were fathomless and dark. "I was the one who noticed you were gone," she said. I was the one who wanted to find you. Simon cleared his throat. He felt oddly lightheaded.
But why? I thought you hated me now.
It had been the wrong thing to say. Isabel shook her head, her dark hair flying, and moved a little away from him on the settee.
Oh, Simon, don't be dense. Is.
He reached out and touched her wrist, hesitantly. She didn't move away, just watched him.
Camille said something to me at the sanctuary. She said that the Shadow Hunters didn't care about Downworlders, just used them. She said the Nephilim would never do for me what I did for them, but you did. You came for me. You came for me.
Of course I did, she said, in a muffled little voice, when I thought something had happened to you. He leaned toward her. Their faces were inches from each other. He could see the reflected sparks of the chandelier in her black eyes. Her lips were parted, and Simon could feel the warmth of her breath. For the first time since he'd become a vampire, he could feel heat, like an electrical charge passing between them.
Isabel, he said.
Not Iz. Not Izzy. Isabel.
Can I?
The elevator pinged, the doors opened, and Alec, Meyer, and Jordan spilled out. Alec looked suspiciously at Simon and Isabel as they sprang apart. But before he could say anything, the double doors of the lobby flew wide, and Shadowhunters poured into the room. Simon recognized Kadira Maris, who immediately flew across the room to Isabel and caught her by the shoulders, demanding to know what had happened. Simon got to his feet and edged away, feeling uncomfortable, and was nearly knocked down by Magnus, racing across the room to get to Alec. He didn't seem to see Simon at all.
After all, in 100, 200 years, it'll be just you and me. We'll be all that's left, Magnus had said to him in the sanctuary.
Feeling unutterably lonely among the milling crowd of Shadow Hunters, Simon pressed himself back against the wall in the vain hope that he wouldn't be noticed.
Alec looked up just as Magnus reached him, caught him, and pulled him close. His fingers traced over Alec's face as if checking for bruises or damage. Under his breath, he was muttering, "How could you? Go off like this and not even tell me? I could have helped you. Stop it." Alec pulled away, feeling mutinous. Magnus checked himself, his voice sobering. "I'm sorry," he said. "I shouldn't have left the party. I should have stayed with you. Camille's gone anyway. No one's got the slightest idea where she went, and since you can't track vampires..." He shrugged. Alec pushed away the image of Camille in his mind, chained to the pipe, looking at him with those fierce green eyes. "Never mind," he said. "She doesn't matter. I know you were just trying to help. I'm not angry with you for leaving the party anyway." "But you were angry," said Magnus. "I knew you were. That's why I was so worried. Running off and putting yourself in danger just because you're angry with me?" "I'm a Shadow Hunter," Alec said. "Magnus, this is what I do. It's not about you. Next time fall in love with an insurance adjuster or..." "Alexander," said Magnus. "There isn't going to be a next time." He leaned his forehead against Alec, gold-green eyes staring into blue. Alec's heartbeat sped up. "Why not?" he said. "You live forever. Not everyone does." "I know I said that," said Magnus. "But Alexander..."
"Stop calling me that," said Alec. "Alexander is what my parents call me. And I suppose it's very advanced of you to have accepted my mortality so fatalistically. Everything dies, blah blah. But how do you think that makes me feel? Ordinary couples can hope. Hope to grow old together, hope to live long lives and die at the same time, but we can't hope for that. I don't even know what it is you want." Alec wasn't sure what he'd expected in response, anger or defensiveness or even humor, but Magnus's voice only dropped, cracking slightly when he said, Alec, if I gave you the impression I had accepted the idea of your death, I can only apologize. I thought I had, and yet still I pictured having you for 50, 60 more years. I thought I might be ready then to let you go. But it's you, and I realize now that I won't be any more ready to lose you then than I am right now. He put his hands gently to either side of Alec's face, which is not at all. So what do we do? Alec whispered. Magnus shrugged and smiled suddenly. With his messy black hair and the gleam in his gold-green eyes, he looked like a mischievous teenager. What everyone does, he replied. Like you said, hope.
Alec and Magnus had begun kissing in the corner of the room, and Simon wasn't quite sure where to look. He didn't want him to think he was staring at them during what was clearly a private moment, but wherever else he looked, he met the glaring eyes of Shadowhunters. Despite the fact that he'd fought with them in the bank against Camille, none of them looked at him with particular friendliness. It was one thing for Isabel to accept him and to care about him, but Shadowhunters en masse were another thing entirely. He could tell what they were thinking. Vampire, downworlder, enemy, was written all over their faces. It came as a relief when the doors burst open again, and Jocelyn came flying in, still wearing a blue dress from the party. Luke was only a few steps behind. Simon, she cried as soon as she caught sight of him. She ran over to him, and to his surprise she hugged him fiercely before letting him go. Simon, where's Clary? Is she... Simon opened his mouth, but no sound came out. How could he explain to Jocelyn, of all people, what had happened that night? Jocelyn, who would be horrified to know that so much of Lilith's evil, the children she had murdered, the blood she had spilled, had all been in the service of making more creatures like Jocelyn's own dead son, whose body even now lay entombed on the rooftop where Clary was with Jace.
I can't tell her any of this, he thought. I can't.
He looked past her at Luke, whose blue eyes rested on him expectantly. Behind Clary's family, he could see the Shadowhunters crowding around Isabel as she presumably recounted the events of the evening.
I...
he began helplessly, and then the elevator doors opened again, and Clary stepped out. Her shoes were gone, her lovely satin dress in bloody rags, bruises already fading on her bare arms and legs. But she was smiling, radiant even, happier than Simon had seen her look in weeks.
Mom!
She exclaimed, and then Jocelyn had flown at her and was hugging her. Clary smiled at Simon over her mother's shoulder. Simon glanced around the room. Alec and Magnus were still wrapped up in each other, and Maya and Jordan had vanished. Isabel was still surrounded by Shadowhunters, and Simon could hear gasps of horror and amazement rise from the group surrounding her as she recounted her story. He suspected some part of her was enjoying it. Isabel did love being the center of attention, no matter what the cause. He felt a hand come down on his shoulder. It was Luke.
Are you all right, Simon?
Simon looked up at him. Luke looked as he always did. Solid, professorial, utterly reliable. Not even the least bit put out that his engagement party had been disrupted by a sudden dramatic emergency. Simon's father had died so long ago that he barely remembered him. Rebecca recalled bits about him, that he had a beard, and would help her build elaborate towers out of blocks. But Simon didn't. It was one of the things he thought he'd always had in common with Clary, that had bonded them, both with dead fathers, both brought up by strong single women. Well, at least one of those things had turned out to be true, Simon thought. Though his mother had dated, he'd never had a consistent fatherly presence in his life, other than Luke. He supposed that in a way, he and Clary had shared Luke, and the Wolfpack looked up to Luke for guidance as well. For a bachelor, who'd never had children, Simon thought, Luke had an awful lot of kids to look after.
I don't know,
Simon said, giving Luke the honest answer he'd like to think he had given his own father.
I don't think so.
Luke turned Simon to face him. You're covered in blood, he said, and I'm guessing it's not yours, because... He gestured toward the mark on Simon's forehead. But hey, his voice was gentle. Even covered in blood, and with the mark of Cain on you, you're still Simon. Can you tell me what happened?
It's not my blood, you're right, Simon said hoarsely. But it's also kind of a long story.
He tilted his head back to look up at Luke. He'd always wondered if maybe he'd have another growth spurt someday, grow a few more inches than the 5'10 he was now, be able to look Luke, not to mention Jace, straight in the eye. But that would never happen now.
Luke, he said, do you think it's possible to do something so bad even if you didn't mean to do it, that you could never come back from it? That no one can forgive you?
Luke looked at him for a long, silent moment, then said, Think of someone you love, Simon. Really love. Is there anything they could ever do that would mean you would stop loving them? Images flashed through Simon's mind, like the pages of a flip book. Clary, turning to smile at him over her shoulder. His sister, tickling him when he was just a little kid. His mother, asleep on the sofa, with the coverlet pulled up to her shoulders. Izzy. He shut the thoughts off hastily. Clary hadn't done anything so terrible that he needed to dredge up forgiveness for her. None of the people he was picturing had. He thought of Clary, forgiving her mother for having stolen her memories. He thought of Jace, what he had done on the roof, how he had looked afterward. He had done what he had done without volition of his own, but Simon doubted Jace would be able to forgive himself regardless. And then he thought of Jordan, not forgiving himself for what he had done to Maya, but forging ahead anyway, joining the prey to lupus, making a life out of helping others.
I bit someone, he said.
The words came out of his mouth, and he wished he could swallow them back. He braced himself for Luke's look of horror, but it didn't come. Did they live? Luke said. This person that you bit. Did they survive? How to explain about Maureen? Lilith had ordered her away, but Simon was sure they hadn't seen the last of her.
I didn't kill her.
Luke nodded once. You know how werewolves become pack leaders? He said. They have to kill the old pack leader. I've done that twice. I have the scars to prove it. He drew the collar of his shirt aside slightly, and Simon saw the edge of a thick white scar that looked ragged, as if his chest had been clawed. The second time, it was a calculated move. Cold-blooded killing. I wanted to become the leader, and that was how I did it. He shrugged. You're a vampire. It's in your nature to want to drink blood. You've held out a long time without doing it. I know you can walk in the sun, Simon. And so you pride yourself in being a normal human boy, but you're still what you are, just like I am. The more you try to crush your true nature, the more it will control you. Be what you are. No one who really loves you will sob. Simon said hoarsely,
My mom.
Clary told me what happened with your mother, and that you've been crashing with Jordan Kyle, said Luke. Look, your mother will come around, Simon. Like Amadis did, with me. You're still her son. I'll talk to her, if you want me to. Simon shook his head silently. His mother had always liked Luke. Dealing with the fact that Luke was a werewolf would probably make things worse, not better. Luke nodded as if he understood. If you don't want to go back to Jordan's, you're more than welcome to stay on my sofa tonight. I'm sure Clary would be glad to have you around, and we can talk about what to do about your mother tomorrow. Simon squared his shoulders. He looked at Isabel across the room, the gleam of her whip, the shine of the pendant at her throat, the flutter of her hands as she talked. Isabel, who wasn't afraid of anything. He thought of his mother, the way she had backed away from him, the fear in her eyes. He'd been hiding from the memory, running from it ever since, but it was time to stop running.
No, he said. Thanks, but I think I don't need a place to crash tonight. I think that I'm going to go home.
Jace stood alone on the roof, looking out over the city, the East River, a silvery black snake twining between Brooklyn and Manhattan. His hands, his lips, still felt warm from Clary's touch, but the wind off the river was icy, and the warmth was fading fast. Without a jacket, the air cut through the thin material of his shirt like the blade of a knife. He took a deep breath, sucking the cold air into his lungs and let it out slowly. His whole body felt tense. He was waiting for the sound of the elevator, the doors opening, the shadow hunters flooding out into the garden. They would be sympathetic at first, he thought, worried about him. Then, as they understood what had happened, then would come the shrinking away, the meaningful looks exchanged when they thought he wasn't watching. He had been possessed, not just by a demon, but by a greater demon. Had acted against the Clave, had threatened and hurt another shadow hunter. He thought about how Jocelyn would look at him when she heard what he'd done to Clary. Luke might understand, forgive, but Jocelyn, he had never been able to bring himself to speak to her honestly. to say the words he thought might reassure her. I love your daughter. More than I ever thought it was possible to love anything. I would never hurt her. She would just look at him, he thought, with those green eyes that were so like Clary's. She would want more than that. She would want to hear him say what he wasn't sure was true. I am nothing like Valentine. Aren't you? The words seemed carried on the cold air, a whisper meant only for his ears. You never knew your mother. You never knew your father. You gave your heart to Valentine when you were a child, as children do, and made yourself a part of him. You cannot cut that away from yourself now with one clean slice of a blade. His left hand was cold. He looked down and saw, to his shock, that somehow he had picked up the dagger, his real father's etched silver dagger, and was holding it in his hand. The blade, though eaten away by Lilith's blood, was whole again and shining like a promise. A cold that had nothing to do with the weather began to spread through his chest. How many times had he woken up like this, gasping and sweating, the dagger in his hand? And Clary, always Clary, dead at his feet. But Lilith was dead. It was over. He tried to slide the dagger into his belt, but his hand didn't seem to want to obey the command his mind was giving it. He felt a sense of stinging heat across his chest, a searing pain. Looking down, he saw that the bloody line that had split Lilith's mark in half, where Clary had slashed him with the dagger, had healed. The mark gleamed redly against his chest. Jace stopped, trying to shove the dagger into his belt. His knuckles turned white as his grip tightened on the hilt, his wrist twisting, desperately trying to turn the blade on himself. His heart was pounding. He had accepted no Eratzes. How had the mark healed so fast? If he could gash it again, disfigure it, even temporarily. But his hands wouldn't obey him. His arm stayed stiffly at his side, and his body turned, against his own will, toward the pedestal where Sebastian's body lay. The coffin had begun to glow, with a cloudy greenish light, almost a witch-like glow. But there was something painful about this light, something that seemed to pierce the eye. Jace tried to step back, but his legs wouldn't move. Icy sweat trickled down his back. A voice whispered at the back of his mind. Come here. It was Sebastian's voice. Did you think you were free because Lilith is gone? The vampire's bite woke me. Now her blood in my veins compels you. Come here. Jace tried to dig in his heels, but his body betrayed him, carrying him forward, though his conscious mind strained against it. Even as he tried to hang back, his feet moved him down the path toward the coffin. The painted circle flashed green as he moved across it, and the coffin seemed to answer with a second flash of emerald light. And then he was standing over it, looking down. Jace bit down hard on his lip, hoping the pain might shock him out of the dream state he was in. It didn't work. He tasted his own blood as he stared down at Sebastian, who floated like a drowned corpse in the water. Those are pearls that were his eyes. His hair was colorless seaweed, his closed eyelids blue. His mouth had the cold, hard set of his father's mouth. It was like looking at a young Valentine. Without his volition, absolutely against his will, Jace's hands began to rise. His left hand laid the edge of the dagger against the inside of his right palm, where life and love lines crisscrossed each other. Words spilled from his own lips. He heard them as if from an immense distance. They were in no language he knew or understood, but he knew what they were. Ritual chanting. His mind was screaming at his body to stop, but it appeared to make no difference. His left hand came down, the knife clenched in it. The blade sliced a clean, sure, shallow cut across his right palm. Almost instantly, it began to bleed. He tried to draw back, tried to pull his arm away, but it was as if he were encased in cement. As he watched in horror, the first blood drop splashed onto Sebastian's face. Sebastian's eyes flew open. They were black, blacker than Valentine's, as black as the demons who had called herself his mother. They fixed on Jace, like great, dark mirrors giving him back his own face. Twisted and unrecognizable, his mouth shaping the words of the ritual, spilling forth in a meaningless babble like a river of black water. The blood was flowing more freely now, turning the cloudy liquid inside the coffin a darker red. Sebastian moved. The bloody water shifted and spilled as he sat up, his black eyes fixed on Jace. The second part of the ritual. His voice spoke inside Jace's head. It is almost complete. Water ran off him like tears. His pale hair pasted to his forehead, seemed to have no color at all. He raised one hand and held it out, and Jace, against the cry inside his own mind, held out the dagger, blade forward. Sebastian slid his hand along the length of the cold, sharp blade. Blood sprang up in a line across his palm. He knocked the dagger aside and took Jace's hand, gripping it with his own. It was the last thing Jace had expected. He couldn't move to pull away. He felt each of Sebastian's cold fingers as they wrapped his hand, pressing their bleeding cuts together. It was like being gripped by cold metal. Ice began to spread up his veins from his hand. A shudder passed over him, and then another. Powerful physical tremors so painful, it felt as if his body were being turned inside out. He tried to scream, and the cry died in his throat. He looked down at his and Sebastian's hands, clenched together. Blood ran through their fingers and down their wrists, as elegant as red lacework. It glittered in the cold electric light of the city. It moved not like liquid, but like moving red wires. It wrapped their hands together in a scarlet binding. A peculiar sense of peace stole over Jace. The world seemed to fall away, and he was standing on the peak of a mountain. The world spread out before him, everything in it his for the taking. The lights of the city around him were no longer electric, but were the light of a thousand diamond-like stars. They seemed to shine down on him with a benevolent glow that said, "This is good. This is right. This is what your father would have wanted." He saw Clary in his mind's eye, her pale face, the fall of her red hair, her mouth as it moved, shaping the words. "I'll be right back. 5 minutes." And then her voice faded, as another spoke over it, drowning it out. The image of her in his mind receded, vanishing, imploring into the darkness, as Eurydice had vanished when Orpheus had turned to look at her one last time. He saw her, her white arms held out to him. And then the shadows closed over her and she was gone. A new voice spoke in Jace's head now. A familiar voice, once hated, now oddly welcome. Sebastian's voice. It seemed to run through his blood, through the blood that passed through Sebastian's hand into his, like a fiery chain. "We are one now, little brother, you and I," Sebastian said. "We are one."
The Mortal Instruments, Book 4, City of Fallen Angels, was written by Cassandra Clare and read by Molly C. Quinn and Ed Westwick. It was recorded by Erica Weintraub at Simon & Schuster and Mark De La Fuente at North Hollywood Sound, with editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. City of Fallen Angels was produced by Carol Shapiro and directed by Carol Shapiro and Fred Sanders. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. City of Fallen Angels is available in hardcover from Margaret K. McElderry Books. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, The Mortal Instruments, Book 1, City of Bones, read by Ari Grainer, Book 2, City of Ashes, and Book 3, City of Glass, both read by Natalie Moore.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.